OTB Gold, the very best of Off the Ball.
Are you crazy?
This is OTB Sports Radio.
This week on OTB Gold.
Rory goes and wins the Grand Slam. Fair play to Rory, he's had a great career, but I still had a great career with three.
The players that aren't in the team in the starting 11, they're the ones you need to rely on through the season now and again. They're the ones, and Celex Ferguson could do it. He could keep a squad of 20, 22, 23 players happy.
I said, I want to be as great an athlete as I can be, and I can't be that here.
OTB Gold, the very best of Off the Ball. Weekdays from 1 p.m. and 6 p.m.
This is OTB Sports Radio, live 24/7 on the Go Loud app. The OTB Podcast Network.
Monday Night Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us. Everyone in.
Now, happy as ever to welcome Rory O'Connor of the Irish Independent to the show. Rory, how you doing?
Hey, Joe, how's it going?
Yeah, very well. So a few bits and bobs to get through with you. James Lowe, for instance, we're going to see him in an Irish jersey in November. I think people expected this from a long way off, but it's as close to official now as it will be.
Yeah, he signed he's confirmed that he signed a three-year deal, which was announced last week. Leinster have a policy. They don't confirm the durations of their deals. So we've had players coming out in ones and twos to let everyone know how long they're staying. And he came out today and did it. So he's signed up until the 2023 World Cup. And that's not really a surprise. He's been absolute quality since he got here. Whatever your views on the project player rule, and he's the last, you know, maybe not the last, because there's two young guys in Munster now, two props who probably will go on to, or may go on to play for Ireland, who they got in, but the last kind of high profile of the project players under the 3 year rule, he's going to add quality to the Ireland jersey. You know, he'll definitely get captain this November as long as he's fit. He won't be there in time if the Six Nations is concluded on schedule in October. He'll just miss that, so he won't be able, you know, Ireland won't have a marquee signing for the last two rounds of the Six Nations. But whatever structure November takes, Andy Farrell will have a new weapon in his armoury in James Lowe.
The image of maybe people in particular like Keith Earls or Jacob Stocktail or Andrew Conway on the bench, or even Conway maybe out of the squad for James Lowe, won't sit comfortably with lots of people suddenly come November. As you said, Lowe is the last of the three-year residency rule players. This will cause heat come November. There will be pieces in the paper criticising Andy Farrell for picking Lowe. We'll be talking about it on the radio. I suspect, though, if the past is any kind of guide, the coach and the RFU will ride that out and they'll get what they see as the best 15 onto the pitch. I don't see an about turn on this situation in November.
No, well, they signed them to play for Ireland. I mean, it's the same as any, you know, CJ Stander, Wundi Aki were recruited to play for Ireland ultimately. You know, they are signed to play for the province for the 3 years, and the province gets the huge benefit of them. And as with all of these cases, I don't like the rule, but I'd never criticise the individual for coming over and taking that opportunity. James Lowe has been an excellent contributor for Leinster over the time that he's been there, and he'll be an excellent contributor for Ireland, I think. You know, I think Bundy Aki and CJ Stander have won Grand Slams with Ireland. You know, CJ was probably up there amongst Ireland's best performers at the last World Cup. I mean, they're just doing what's being asked of them by their employers. The criticism really should be of, you know, if you're going to criticize the whole thing, it should be the RFU and, you know, opportunistic / cynical exploitation of a law that you know, I think is deeply flawed, by going out and signing players to play for Ireland, you know, which, you know, probably undermines the spirit. Sorry, it doesn't probably. I think it undermines the spirit of the international game. But it's gone now. After James Lowe, Keenan Knox and Roman Salanoa, who are both at Munster now and may go on to play for Ireland in the next 2 or 3 years, it's a five-year residency law, and these cases, I think, will become fewer, and I think people will be less critical of players. And I don't think players should be individually criticised for playing, you know, for doing this. I don't think it's on them really. But, you know, if a player's come and spent 5 years here, it's probably more meritorious, and it's more of a life commitment than three.
Stockdale, Earls, Conway, Lowe. Who starts?
It's a great question. Stockdale, at the moment, Conway and Lowe are probably the two informed players. Stockdale's had a rough 18 months, but is probably the quality operator of the field. I mean, Earls is still on a national contract, but is in the autumn of his career. Stockdale, I think, will come back and will perform for Ireland again. But, you know, if you're only as good as your last game, he had a bit of a bad outing at Twickenham, and it wasn't his first bad game in the last little while. So, I mean, I don't think Lowe can expect to come straight into the starting team and take a spot. I think he'll have a little bit of work to do to prove himself. That'll add a bit of spice to the Munster. We may have two Leinster v Munster games within 3 weeks in the Pro 14 if things shape up the way they look like they're going to shape up. So that adds a bit of spice to that. But at the moment, you know, I think Conway has been excellent. I think Larmer is the fullback. You do have the option of shifting Jacob Stockdale into fullback. He's played quite well there for Ulster. Lowe looks like he has everything that Ireland, you know, Ireland have been losing collisions on a fairly alarming basis in their biggest games. Lowe will fix, well, you know, will add something to that collision winning part of the game. He's good in every department and he adds a bit of spark. So it's going to be hard to argue against him, but I'm sure those three, you know, quality operators will have something to say about it before they hand the jersey over to him and say good luck.
Rory, you mentioned Leinster don't necessarily reveal how long a contract is. They announced 28 players had signed contracts last week. So I'm sure you were busy. It would seem Fergus McFadden and Rob Kearney are amongst them. So they will be staying on for the next couple of months anyway to finish out this season, but into next season. I'm sure everyone knows what I mean.
Yeah, I mean, it's a mark of how successful and how much good news Leinster generate is that they just basically stockpile all their contract announcements for one date and kind of in a random date towards the end of the season. Obviously, it's different this year, but you know, other provinces, when they lose a big game, suddenly the contracts are rolled out on the Monday to try and change the narrative. Leinster don't bother. Like, one of those contracts, I believe, was signed in July 2019, so they held off for 11 months to announce it. So in terms of McFadden and Kearney, they would have finished with Leinster at the end of, in what, tomorrow. Then, you know, McFadden is retiring. Kearney has said he wants to continue, but certainly hasn't announced that he's got anything lined up. But it looks like both of their time in blue will come to an end, depending on when they finish, in either September and October, depending on how Leinster get on in the European Cup. And will bow out after a pretty glorious Leinster careers and Ireland careers. And it just remains to be seen whether Rob Kearney decides that he wants to go and pursue something in France or in Japan or in the USA or wherever rugby could take him, because I'm sure he's no shortage of options. But it looks like his time with Leinster and with Ireland is up at this stage.
So you mentioned how this season is going to finish out. We're adding layers to the schedule. Champions Cup quarter-final is penciled in for the weekend of the 17th of September, which includes Leinster Saracens semi-finals the weekend after, and then the final with presumably maybe Six Nations games in between. I don't know exactly, but the final...
Pro 14. The first two rounds of next season's Pro 14 will take place before the final of last season's Champions Cup.
Okay, so the final of the Champions Cup is 17th of October, and then potentially we've Six Nations?
Then potentially Six Nations on the 24th and the 31st, I think.
Okay.
And then we may have an 8-team tournament between the Six Nations, Fiji and Japan, which is currently the way the winds are shifting. But that is very much up in the air. World Rugby were supposed to confirm by tomorrow what November and October will look like. But there's, as ever with these things, there's pushback from the French and English clubs. It looks like that. I think they've confirmed today to AFP that that's going to be kicked on for another 2 or 3 weeks into the middle of July. So we've no clarity on what the international scene will look like just yet.
Yeah, there was meant to be a decision tomorrow. Whether it was going to be revealed or not, I'm not sure. But World Rugby were going to decide all this tomorrow and it's been postponed. So clearly there's a lot going on behind the scenes. Like, for instance, I saw the French, usually it's a 3-week window in November. The French are looking for a 6-week window in November. And all of that, of course, without any of us knowing really if Southern Hemisphere teams can even travel.
Yeah, I think what will happen is that the Rugby Championship will play off at that time when all of these Super Rugby competitions come to an end. So they'll be unwilling, and also that they have travel restrictions in place, which may mean they can't even do that, but they'll be unwilling to come north, which means that the Six Nations teams, who already have to finish two rounds, well, Ireland and Italy have two rounds, everyone else has one round of Six Nations to finish before they get their money-spinning 3 or 4 tests. And I can really understand where they're coming from in that, but they... You know, the clubs are also desperate for cash. Unlike in Ireland, where the national team pays the bills, they don't have that system. So, you know, your Toulouse's, your Montpellier's, they need gate receipts just as much as everyone else. They need TV income, they need prize money, they need their players, who they pay an awful lot of money to. I was on a call with Leinster CEO Mick Dawson on Thursday, and he said that, you know, to fans, and he described the kind of the way it was gone, they went about organising this as naive. It was kind of presented as a fait accompli to the clubs. And the clubs are too important to really, you know, go about it that way. It needs to be completely inclusive. It feels like we're having the same, it's a bit like the GAA championship structures. You can have this conversation over and over and over again. And it looks like we may just end up with the status quo and the exact same. The Lions are about to announce that they're going to go ahead as planned in July and August, which means that we're not going to see a shift next season. But it's very messy. And really, you know, you see the Premier League has been played. You can see Super Rugby Aotearoa. Australia's back this week. You know, rugby's coming back. Football's back. Other sports are coming back. And rugby still doesn't have really a defined schedule for when it comes back. And that's kind of going to be a little bit damaging, I think.
By the way, on Saracens, so Leinster extending the contracts of the likes of Fergus McFadden or Rob Kearney, that's pretty straightforward business. Saracens, for obvious reasons, are in an entirely different situation next season. I was reading today, Brad Barrett, for instance, has signed a short-term contract, which will include the Leinster game. But then there's players like George Cruz, certainly, I think Alex Goode as well. Some of these players who are on the way out, are they sticking around to finish out the Champions Cup season? Can Saracens afford to keep them around? Do we know what kind of Saracens might rock up to Dublin?
I think a lot of them will have left, because I think most transfers went through or are going through tomorrow, because traditionally contracts finish on the 30th of June and start on the 1st of July. So the players that are going on loan for a season, there's a couple of them, they'll be gone. Anyone who's like George Cruz is I'm almost certain is gone. Lazowski's gone. Like the players of good caliber have left the club. Barrett is obviously retiring, so he can just pen a bit like Kearney and McFadden, in that he has nothing lined up for next season, so he can pen a short-term deal. It sounds like Atoje, Davunipola's own Farrell are sticking around, so I think they will have some quality on the pitch, but certainly it's not going to be the same Saracens team that Leinster faced in the Champions Cup final last year.
Yeah, the latest I had today, sorry I sprung that on you, but the latest I had today was Farrell, as you say, Itoje, the Vunipolas are all staying. Elliot Daly's going to stay. Jamie George is going to stay. Liam Williams gone. Will Skelton gone. Yeah. The likes of Matt Gallagher to Munster. So it's weakened, but it's not totally bereft. But it's not the Saracens of last year, that's for sure.
No, like that's the core of the England team. So we saw how good the Saracens reserves were when they came to Thomond Park in December and you know, pushed Munster close and ultimately did for Munster's season by playing so well in bad conditions in Thomond Park. So they have the best academy in England as well as having the best first team. But it's a giant leap for those players to come in, albeit around a core of, you know, experienced winners, you know, England players, Lions, in large part. But, you know, against Leinster, who you'd imagine are going to hit the ground running, who haven't been weakened at all, and it's going to be very, very difficult away from home, you know, at the Aviva Stadium, albeit it might be behind closed doors, which, you know, would suit Saracens. But it's not the prospect that it once was. I'm sure that there's a belligerence to Saracens that will they'll produce something of a performance. But if you think those players were all here 2-3 years ago during the glorious 2018 season and they couldn't put it up to Leinster at their best, and, you know, they've been considerably weakened since then.
The latest on the pay cut situation, as I understand it, BDO, I think I was reading Kieran Medler on behalf of the players' union, went in and had a look at the IRFU books, did an analysis of where the union is, and talks are set to resume on Wednesday. Now, I'm not sure if, having looked at the books, the players' union now accept that a pay cut is imminent and there's no alternative, or whether they feel emboldened to say it's not necessary. Have we heard either way?
No, that I don't know. My feeling is that the players are willing to accept some form of a cut, that they understand that the RFU has taken a massive hit. And coming into this, before they even saw the books, they accepted that, look, like everyone else pretty much in Irish society, things have been hit hard. They're going to have to play ball to some degree. They were blindsided by the number, 20%, coming out in the media before they were ever shown the books, before the discussions started, before it was even presented to them. I think that's probably hardened their attitude to it. They're looking at a set of books that, you know, a company, or I'm not sure how you describe the RFU, but, you know, that their accounts last year were spectacular. They, you know, produced record revenues. They've no debt. They sold Newlands. Now they've ring-fenced funds for club game. But they will look at that and go, right, you've got some wiggle room. And all these contracts that were announced last week, I mean, I presume they're legally binding. I don't think the RFU can force. I'm not sure how the RFU go about forcing the players to take a cut. They can't drop to a 4-day week because they're full-time professional players. You can't be a sportsman for 6 days or for 4 days out of five. They're 7 day a week employees with short careers. I know they want to protect the players who are on lower income. They did that with the pay deferral scheme, which was agreed between the union and the players union. You know, the players below any employee, but the players below 25 grand didn't take any sort of a cut, whereas anyone over a certain threshold, I can't remember exactly what it was, got 50% off their cut off their salary on a tiered basis the whole way up. And that seemed like a very fair way of going about it. Jacob Stockdale came out and said, look, we didn't want the lower paid employees. You know, he's on a national contract. He said they didn't want the lower paid employees to bear the brunt of this, that they were willing to do it. And they showed a lot of leadership in doing that. I think they'll come to some solution along those lines. But I think that's going to be fairly interesting to watch on Wednesday, how far the RFU are willing to go and how damaged the relations have gotten, because it was a very close relationship between Rugby Players Ireland and RFU. How far they're willing to go in terms of helping the RFU with their own situation. Obviously, Kieran Medler will have looked at that, looked at the books and made a judgment based on that. We'll know a lot more, I think, after Wednesday. But it'll be quite telling, because the RFU have been preparing the ground for this in their public comments throughout the crisis. Philip Brown has repeatedly said that their income has fallen off a cliff. And, you know, there's no arguing with that. They've had no games. But they do have reserves. They do have significant land holdings. They do have assets. They don't have any debts. They may have other ways of going about generating income. Certainly Rugby Players Ireland may say, you know, what about this? Maybe they'll go to them with solutions and the RFU might not like that. So it's going to be interesting to see whether they can come to some sort of arrangement, because the deferral scheme ends tomorrow.
Okay. And there's no great difference in terms of negotiations here beyond just the amounts of money. I know you're saying the lower paid players will be protected, but just national contracts and provincial contracts, these are all part of the same negotiations here with the IRFU.
Yeah, so every member of the national and provincial staff has taken a non-playing staff has taken a 20% cut and gone to a four-day week. They're trying to get the players to do the same, so that would apply to every player across the board in all four provinces and the Ireland Sevens teams, the support staff, all that sort of stuff. So that's what's at play, and I think a flat 20% cut is something that the Rugby Players Ireland would object to, because they want to protect the lower paid, and they also probably don't like to look at that 20% figure either. I think they want to bring that down.
Or even for the highest earners.
Well, I think that's all to be worked out, but yeah. I think they would like to keep, you know, because they are, you know, they're only earning that high figure for a short number of years. I think that's one of the points that they're sticking to. So it'll be like those contracts, you know, are inked, you know. I mean, the RFU may want to reset the wage structure, but they may have to wait a year or two until contracts expire and they start offering lower ones, you know. I mean, it's going to be like the players have played ball up to now, but I think their position has hardened.
Okay, Rory O'Connor, Irish Independent. Thanks so much, Rory. Appreciate it.
Cheers, Joe. Talk to you later.
We'll be back to the rugby on Wednesday evening, obviously. In the meantime, short ad break, 22 minutes gone. Crystal Palace 0, Burnley 0 in this evening's Premier League action. And in the League 2 playoff, it's half-time. And Northampton Town are 2-0 up against Exeter in that League 2 playoff this evening. We'll take a short ad break. Jack McCaffrey is what we're talking about for the rest of this hour.
Monday Night Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us, everyone in.
That was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.